Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Vice President Kamala Harris, now running for president, denying she flip-flopped on key issues in an interview with CNN. Harris was pointedly asked whether she supports a ban on fracking.
No, and I made that clear on the debate stage in 2020, that I would not ban fracking. As vice president, I did not ban fracking. As president, I will not ban fracking.
Harris now also saying she'd continue construction on a border wall, something she said she was against during the Trump administration. On the campaign trail, former President Trump says he'd push for IVF treatments to be paid by insurance companies or Uncle Sam. Ukraine's defense minister at the Pentagon this morning trying to convince the U.S. to lift restrictions on striking inside Russia using Western-made weapons. Three Dallas police officers shot, one of them dead after a shootout with a suspect who police say tried to ambush an officer in his vehicle. The suspect shot and killed by police after a car chase. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump back in Wisconsin for the first time since the Republican convention in Milwaukee last month.
We're going to win this election. We're going to turn this country around. We're going to become an unbelievable growth country.
Trump answered questions at a town hall in La Crosse last night. Civic Media political editor Dan Schaefer says Trump's answers lacked specifics.
Each question got into just a piece of the stump speech and never really gave a substantive answer.
Topics range from abortion to Social Security to illegal immigration. Expect heavy traffic at times this Labor Day weekend. The busiest time should be this afternoon and all day Monday. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation recommends checking 511WI.gov. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLCX News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles, in for Jimmy Cuska. Students, supporters, and protesters were part of the action in La Crosse yesterday. UW La Crosse student move-in is underway, and last night during the Trump rally, some others moved in temporarily to protest the appearance of the former president. Across from the La Crosse Center were some protesters with some signs pointing out Trump's felon status. As the new school year kicks off, the new chancellor talked to students for the first time. James Beebe, the new chancellor at UW La Crosse, addressed the university community this week, sharing his vision for the future. Beebe previously served as provost and vice president of academic affairs at Keene State College in New Hampshire, stressed the importance of completing the Prairie Springs Science Center project. The new chancellor steps into the role vacated by Joe Gao, who was fired in December after his involvement in online pornography came to light. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, in for Jimmy Cuska for WLCX News.
The Brewers blank the Giants. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports. Milwaukee's Aaron Civale and Aaron Ashby combined for a two-hit shutout to give the Brewers a series win over San Francisco. The Brewers piled up eight hits in the 6-0 victory. Now the Brewers turn the page to a doubleheader Friday against the Cincinnati Reds in Ohio, where temperatures are expected to be around 100 degrees. The Wisconsin Badgers kick off their football season tonight against Western Kentucky at 8 p.m. It's the second year of the Luke Fickell era after going 7-6 a year ago. First-year starting Badgers quarterback Tyler Van Dyke is excited to get to work.
Just the atmosphere. I'm excited to play in front of this crowd and excited to just get out there with my teammates. We've been practicing all year long, working together.
You can hear the Badgers tonight on our Civic Media stations WRJN, WRCE, WFHR, and WLAK, or on the free Civic Media app. For Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
We are headed into an absolutely fantastic Labor Day weekend today. Partly cloudy, becoming sunny. It'll be cooler and less humid with a high of 81 this afternoon. Tonight, 56. Tomorrow, sunny, 84. Then sunshine and cooler with highs in the mid-70s on Sunday and Labor Day. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 71.
Matt Nair on air.
You know, Greg Buck, I think it is time I need a little time away.
Jane, are you going on vacation?
Yes, I am going on vacation. I feel confident. You're going to do a great job. You got Calvin.
Wait, I'm hosting?
Yes, dear, you're going to be hosting.
I thought you were taking me with you. Okay, I guess I will host the show in your stead. Thank you very much.
I trust you.
Matinee on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We're going to give away some Milwaukee Brewers baseball tickets and our old friend Peter Rapine from EPOM's World with a Week in Review.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
This is the talk of lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, Chief Calvin. How you doing, man? One more day.
Yeah, you said it. I'm doing well. Ready to head into the weekend.
Yeah, a beautiful weekend, man. 70 degrees or so.
That's what the weather report just said. It's supposed to be, it's going to be a little rainy the rest of the day, but Saturday, Sunday, and Monday are supposed to be beautiful.
All right. So it's Friday. That means the nondescript person, Sandy Williams. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. The Labor Day, Memorial Day weekend's always got bad weather. I think Labor Day typically is pretty good weather. So September is more reliable than June.
Yeah,
in terms of what you're going to get, and so here we are today, pretty gloomy.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about, Sandy, but I would be remiss if I didn't say that, man, I was so proud of the guys of Voices of the Elders in the meeting we had the other day.
Yeah, I was
and
gonna
the quality of the men.
I was gonna mention that for the listeners, we were at a meeting with a local foundation. And Earl has organized this Voice of the Elders group, VOTE. It's an acronym.
Right.
And the idea is that the elder fellows in the community are mentoring young boys who are in the fork in the road in terms of their time in life where they can make choices, some of them bad, some of them good. And it's a time when young people need mentoring to make sure that their choices are the best possible. And the most moving thing, I talked to a number of people about this, but Frank Kummerbach, the fellow who was running the meeting, asked everyone to tell their story. And when you listen to the stories, everybody in that room had been raised in difficult circumstances by their grandmother. One of them had raised in Ghana and came to this country. A fellow had been raised in a situation in which
In Detroit
and had...
In the 60s.
Run-ins with the criminal system until he was sent off by his parents to live with his grandmother and grandfather and turned his life around. Every one of those people had had a successful middle-class life and had successfully raised families and had successfully sent children to college, and some of them well beyond college, and were all really successful people. And everybody, Frank voiced it, but everyone was in the position, America's been good to me. And, it's hard to say that. You'd think it would be hard to say that when you realize how they started, okay? But they all came through.
Well, Sandy, the real heart of it, the real heart of, Voices of the Elders and kind of why we do the thing we do, I think it was Thursday, yesterday. the chief of police. I don't know if you saw the story in the city of Milwaukee. Seven young boys, stolen car. You've heard the story over and over again.
Yeah.
Stole a car, and were going to steal another car. Security guards saw them. They shot at the security guard. Police chase ensued. They shot at the police. And the chief of police said, enough. You know, we can't do this. It's not the police's job to raise these children. And so they're put in a no-win situation. These are still children, 12, 13, 14 years old with guns, Sandy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the horror, that guns are so common and so available that, you know, it's not a slingshot. You know, when I was a kid, if you were going to go out and be pesky and
lawless
vandal, you might have a slingshot. You might break the street lamp or something. But, you know, kids today, the choices they have to make involve some terrible opportunities. And need mentoring and need to be cared for. And, you know, it's in a way, it's kind of hard to blame a 12-year-old for the fact that they haven't been taught the path to success. They haven't. And, you know, and one of the things Voice of the Elders is doing is putting together a program to help these young people see their own blueprint path for success. I thought that was an exceedingly good description of it, the blueprint for success, and to help kids figure that out. You know, what are the paths to success? Because there's an awful lot of children we have who have nothing that they can see that's tangible, that's visible to them,
right,
that shows them how they get from here to success. You know, if all they're measuring is the tangible things they can buy or the tangible things they can have, not even buy, they're going to start thinking about ways to have those things that aren't necessarily on the straight and narrow, right? You can have a car, at least for an hour, if you steal it.
You know, Sandy, you hit the nail on the head, because you said it's hard to blame a 12-year-old or 13-year-old. And that's my perspective. And so people are saying you need to lock them up for longer periods of time. That's what you need to do. You got to lock them. And I'm like, man.
Well, you take a 12-year-old and you lock them up for a long period of time, and they're probably destined to a lifetime of not being able to contribute to society. I mean, yes, I think everybody has to be held accountable, including 12-year-olds. I mean, one of the things that young people have to learn is accountability.
Right, which is what we want to do.
Which is what the mentoring is trying to do, is to try and give them a vision of how they could be held accountable and what kind of benefits they could derive from holding themselves accountable, right? That's really what we need to teach people to do, is hold themselves accountable so that they make the right choices. And that's what this program's all about. And that's what we need more of. And that's unfortunately what the community needs to provide. But obviously, there's a lot of children in situations where they aren't having this built into them at an early enough age. And like I said, it's hard to blame the individual children, because they're the ones who were born into a situation where they had no choice of how they were born in, what they were born into. But we as a society better get a grip on it and better figure out a way to deal with all of those children, because we want them to be contributing positive members in society.
Well, you know, Sandy, many people in this audience don't live in areas where this is taking place. They may not understand the magnitude. You do. Because you're right close to it. They don't understand the magnitude of what is happening. And it's not just in the city of Milwaukee. It's in urban centers all over this nation. It's a national problem. And so it's got to be prioritized.
Well, you know, it's a national problem. It's even a problem in rural areas. We have many children who are in states of depression or lost vision. I mean, the rural problem with drugs is very, very big, and it hits a bunch of young people who might be acting out in their own lost way, in a different way. They might not be stealing cars. They might be using methamphetamine. But, you know, we've got issues that we need to deal with, and society needs to help everybody deal with it. It takes a village. You know, I've talked about how de Tocqueville has said that America didn't have a sense of community, and he thought, this is in 1830, that maybe that would be a disadvantage for America. We need to develop a sense of community that wraps its arms around these problems, because it's only the community, the big community, that's going to resolve it. And it might even take some governmental support. The lack of a safety net, the lack of health care, broad health care, the lack of mental health care involved in the health care that we provide to people. A lot of these things are factors that contribute to this problem. And poverty is a biggest issue.
Hey, Al from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Al. You say what? Al. Okay, we'll bring Al back. So Sandy, I just think that when we're talking about this, it's not prioritized, and the nation does itself a disservice down the road if we don't try to fix it while they're children, right?
Yeah, I mean, the
it's cheaper to fix it while they're children.
You know, yeah, there's a big difference between the 25-year-old criminal conduct and the 12-year-old criminal conduct. A 25-year-old is further down the path.
Yeah.
And it's probably
and more desperate.
And it's probably harder to change the path of that person into the proper path, and incarceration, you know, might be the right answer for a while. Rehabilitation should be part of that answer as well. But when you think about how the many of the crimes in the inner city, much of the disruption in the inner city is really related to very young people, right?
Absolutely.
The stolen car craze
is not
adolescence.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Stolen cars is not new.
Right.
Even when I was young, there were younger guys who were stealing cars.
Yeah, we called it joyriding back then, but that was a less frequent occurrence. But the jacking of cars now, and the competitive aspect of it, and the, you know, it's become an epidemic. That's a serious problem. But the answer is not going to be to incarcerate 12 and 13-year-olds for extended periods of time, because that's going to destroy the capacity to have these people headed in the right path. And for society at large, if you just want to look at it economically, the economic costs of not solving these issues is very substantial. Wisconsin has gone from its criminal justice system in 1970 being a relatively small part of the budget to now the criminal justice system, particularly the penal system, being a very, very significant part of the Wisconsin budget, a very expensive part.
You know, Sandy, this ties into one of the things that I wanted to talk about today as well, and that's, do Americans have a constitutional right to own AR-15s? That's another article that's in Wall Street Journal this morning, because people keep arguing about the constitutional right to own an AR-15. And so how are these children getting their hands on these guns?
Maybe they have a constitutional right to owning an Abrams tank. Really. I mean, where does the line stop in terms of the ability to own weaponry?
844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams, and you, Al, will get you on the other side. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into a Friday edition of the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
When you think about Labor Day and what it means, do you think about Wisconsin? You should, but let's go back to explain. In the mid-1800s, activists pushed for a day to recognize workers' contributions. President Grover Cleveland signed a law in 1894 making the first Monday of every September a national holiday. So where did the first labor union form in Wisconsin? Wausau? Green Bay? Milwaukee? The answer coming up. The Badger State has an impressive history. Bricklayers and carpenters formed unions in the 1840s and were the first to push for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance. Now, did you guess? This all happened first in Milwaukee. The state's labor unions formed in 1847. The National Labor Union didn't form until 1866, 19 years later. Leading the way for other states is this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Al. Hey, Al. Good morning to you, Al.
Good morning, gentlemen.
All right.
I listened to what the police chief said, but everybody keeps dancing around the responsibility. When a child is brought onto this earth, the parents are responsible for that child and all of their actions until they're adults. The law says they're adults at age 18, used to be 21. But no matter what they do, their parents are responsible for their actions, and they're not being held accountable at that level. Now, you know, I work with people in the prisons. I work with people out in the community in different capacities. I teach parenting classes. I teach anger management, healthy relationships. But the point is, there's no accountability at this level because they keep passing the buck from one to the other. And our so-called representatives in our government are sitting on their butts collecting checks and doing totally nothing with regard to, there's no accountability to them. That is our issue, and the voices of the elders, that needs to be something that's ongoing at every level in every community. But the point is, nobody want to hear nothing about you old people. Y'all don't know nothing about what's going on. That's what you hear.
Right.
I had a class yesterday. My oldest student was 71. The youngest was 22. And they said they're arguing about what they don't know, how old people can't tell the young people what to do and how to get along. This has to go back to the home. I was at a conference a week ago about an organization who does a lot of good work. The point is, keep wanting to draw people away from the home and fix stuff, but they don't ever want to work with, how can I help rebuild the responsibility in the home? How can I help improve the home life so that the ancillary services out in the community will enhance that?
Well, you know, Al, what you're saying is a recitation in many ways of what the conservatives say. You know, what the hell? It's just the homes that are failing. But what we have to get at sociologically is why are homes failing, and what are the pressures that are creating these homes to fail, and for homes maybe not to exist in so many circumstances, and that is the horror. Actually, that is the toughest part of this whole thing, is that the people who should be accountable for these children are the people who brought them to life, and unfortunately, that's not happening. And And for all the talk, the arm waving that liberals want to do about solving it, some of what we've done as liberals is to make it impossible, for instance, for there to be orphanages. So the ability to take children away from the environment in which they are not thriving has become more difficult in society because of a bunch of rules we've enacted, just as we have for the mentally infirm. If you have a family member who's got mental problems, you realize how difficult it is to force anything upon them that they aren't willing to undertake themselves. And we've sort of done the same thing with families, and we have a lack of capacity to force things on them. It's a complex problem that's sociological, but while we're solving it, we've got generations of kids who are living within that problem, and if it isn't solved for them, they're lost.
So we've got a definition of home different today than it was when I was a kid, because, you know, so what comprises a home? Just a place where, you know, a person can get out of shelter, just a roof over their head. Even if in many of these places, Al, you and I know there's no furniture. We know there's no food. We know there's nothing there. And so when you have young people who, through no fault of their own, are born into those environments, do we just say it's the responsibility of the person, the adult that's in that situation, when we know basically what the outcome of those young people's lives are going to be if we don't step in as a society? Because at some point in time, the society is going to be saddled with having to deal with the outcomes of the lack of development of those children as they grow into adulthood, Sandy?
Well, this is going to be startling maybe, but I've often thought that there's a bunch of young people who ought to be going to boarding school.
Okay? No question.
And boarding school might look a lot like orphanages, you know, in a way, when you take a 9-year-old and put them into a living situation, a different living situation designed to have them go to school there, that you can call that a boarding school, or you can call that something closer to an orphanage. But, you know, I think that there's more radical things that need to be considered. They might be turning the page backwards in some respects to save all these children, but there's a bunch of people. And the fact is that the chaos that's created in the inner city is really by a relatively small number of people.
But growing.
But when you have a chaotic source of problem within a community, it doesn't take that many to create a chaotic situation in the community and a chaotic image of the community. And I think an awful lot of the situation that's involved with the urban versus rural kind of dilemma we have in this country is the fact that the urban image has been tainted by some of this chaos, which is really a small number of people.
Al, you got the last of it.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
I've been trying to respond, but you had my mic turned off.
Okay, go ahead.
The point is, the poverty and things that Sandy talks about, look at Milwaukee used to be one of the top industrial cities in this Midwest. And most of those jobs have moved outside the city, outside the bus routes, to the point where a lot of the people who are stuck in the city, we used to call it the donut hole. Because all of the resources that are needed to help build the family and build decent homes, et cetera, moved out of the reach of certain populations.
So Al, hang
but
on.
This was all planned and on intention.
Al, hang on. Because as we move towards Labor Day on Monday, and Sandy, that's why you're playing the music you are, this conversation is worthy of it. So hang on, Al. 844-967-2789. We'll take a couple more minutes to address this.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You can always continue the conversation on social media.
Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Two people in Wisconsin are dead from West Nile virus. A third was in the hospital last we knew. They're the first human cases in Wisconsin reported this year, and they happened in Outagamie, Fond du Lac, and Brown counties. Health officials say all three were diagnosed in July. The two who died, died in August. This week is World Water Week. Conservationist Danny Quissel says droughts in recent years remind us that water is a precious resource.
It's a mindset to have in wet periods and dry periods. I think you build those habits over the long term. I think it's important to be thinking about being a good steward of the resource.
Quissel says innovation and technology have made agriculture more efficient in using water to grow food. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLCX News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles, in for Jimmy Cuska. The lacrosse talk with Trump was mainly about the economy and health care. The town hall event with former President Donald Trump was moderated by former Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard. She has endorsed Trump and had questions of her own, plus those from people in attendance. Trump promised to lower grocery prices and interest rates, while also announcing plans for government-funded in vitro fertilization treatments. An audit of the state's Fish and Wildlife Fund has been authorized by state lawmakers. It's to verify proper use of the money coming in from hunting and fishing licenses. The move comes as concerns mount over potential misallocation of the funds by the DNR for non-related projects. State officials are stressing the importance of directing the funds exclusively towards hunting, fishing, and conservation activities. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, in for Jimmy Cuska for WLCX News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. One of America's favorite entertainers is writing her autobiography as a Broadway musical. Yahoo News reports that Dolly Parton will bring glitz and glamour to the stage in New York and do it on her terms. The show will tell the story of her humble childhood and growing up with 11 siblings in Tennessee and follow her rise to fame in Nashville. As fun as that may sound, it gets even better as her music will be showcased throughout the story. Hello, I'm Dolly will premiere in 2026. Will Ben Affleck ever recover from his failed marriage of almost 2 years to Jennifer Lopez? Robert Kennedy Jr.'s daughter, Kik, might have the answers. According to Page Six, Kik, whose real name is Kathleen, which is actually much easier to say with Kennedy, the duo has been hanging out at various spots around L.A. over the last several months. Spokespeople for Affleck and Kennedy say the two are just friends who hang out at hotels alone and have sex. I paraphrase the last part. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
We are headed into an absolutely fantastic Labor Day weekend today. Partly cloudy, becoming sunny. It'll be cooler and less humid with a high of 81 this afternoon. Tonight, 56. Tomorrow, sunny, 84. Then sunshine and cooler with highs in the mid-70s on Sunday and Labor Day. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
At Skechers, we put the S in comfort. Now, I know you're probably spelling comfort in your head and asking yourself, is that possible? Am I just a really bad speller? Look, I don't know your spelling aptitude, but Skechers most definitely put the S in comfort, because Skechers is the comfort technology company and has developed fits and features that change everything you know about comfort, like hands-free Skechers slip-ins, the ultimate in comfort and convenience. It's footwear you just step into and they're on, with no bending down. Find Skechers at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
What's better than one win? Three wins? With Straight Savings, you keep your own phone, get one line for only $25 a month with real unlimited data, and get rewarded with a $200 phone credit after 12 months. It's a win-win-win. Head to Walmart or visit straighttalk.com today. Switch to Straight Talk. Less dollars, more sense. Straight Savings plan enrollment requires compatible unlocked device and new line of service. Bonus device credit requires 12 months of active service. Offer ends if eligibility requirements are no longer met. Taxes and fees apply. For network management practices, see Straight Talk's terms and conditions.
Maggie Dawn.
Fred Gutenberg, whose daughter was killed in the Parkland shooting, joins me next. We'll talk about why Derek Van Orten is unfit to serve another term in U.S. Congress.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Weeds and Sandy the Music.
Well, it's all about workers and unions. This is Labor Day, Labor Day weekend, which was a holiday, I think, probably that was initially initiated probably by unions, actually, in terms of its recognition.
No question.
And so this was Billy Bragg, a British guy, and this is probably an ode to British unions, actually. But, yeah, it's going to be about workers.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about unions a little bit later on. So, Al, you were saying before we had to go to a quick break.
I
want you to finish your thought. Go ahead.
The government, our government, the city, county, and others, planned to move a lot of the industrial jobs out of the city of Milwaukee. Those companies did not shut down. They moved out of the realm of the people living in the inner city. And they laughed and said that we call this the donut hole. And those jobs were taken out of the realm of the bus or lines in the city and the county, to the point where if you didn't have a car, you couldn't get to the jobs. These are small towns. I'm all over the state. These people are begging for employees. They're doing whatever they can to get people to come to where they are to get the jobs, but the jobs left the city. The city, the people didn't leave the jobs, and that created a lot of the poverty we've got right now. Milwaukee used to have things going on. A.O. Smith and Harnish Figure, all those companies, they employed a lot of the minority population, and those people were making living wages, and we didn't have the crime. We didn't have all of this other stuff going on because people were living better and they could find employment to be able to take care of their families. Now everything is so fragmented. It's just like most minority families. They're fragmented to the point where they have no support system. That's what I was talking about, and both of you know this.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for the call, man. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Brendan from New Jersey. Good morning to you, Brendan. You say what?
Yeah, I just wanted to lend something to the conversation about, you know, these misguided and these kids that end up on the streets. I went through the system. I was adopted out of Ireland and brought over to the United States. I ran away from home twice. On the second time, I was told if I ran away from home, I wasn't coming back. So I ended up in the system, but I was out in California in Marin County, so I was lucky. But the problem is that the federal government needs to not have overworked social workers who are planting these kids in unsafe situations. It seems to be harder to adopt a child than it does just throw them in some foster family where kids are being abused, the money's not being spent properly, and the system itself is completely broken. So, if we had a softer landing spot for a lot of these kids where they could actually flourish and get an education and do the things they needed to do, I think that would be a good starting point.
You know, Brendan, you talked about the system being broken. I can go to my own life. And with the young man that we are raising, and we had him for 5 years because his mother couldn't handle him. And so we stepped up, my wife and I, and so we were raising him and without any financial support, anything for 5 years. And so no problem. But then when it came to the system getting involved in it, you know, and the system knew we had him. But then it took 3 years or more for them to finally say, okay, we think you're good enough to step in this void for this child's life. And they went through us as well they should with a fine tooth comb to, and man, it was so involved in order for us to even, after we've had him for 5 years, I remember saying to the courts, if we weren't good enough to have him for the first 5 years we had him, and now you, as we step up for extended and making a major commitment to this, it's so trying and difficult on us that you almost want to walk away. You're right. The system is trying to protect the child, but it's running away a lot of people who could really make a difference.
I think what the important words I heard from what Brendan said is we need to find soft landings. You know.
Oh, no question.
And soft landings, you know, we've got a bunch of people, a bunch of foster homes are in it to make money. They aren't in it for the benefit of the children. And we've got to find a mechanism. We were talking off the air about how orphanages sprang up from the beginning of the Industrial Revolution to deal with the plight of urban poverty-stricken youths and the familyless youth, and somehow society has gotten all wound up in its socks about all the technicalities associated with the process of a soft landing, and we failed to develop adequate soft landings, and we end up with hard landings, right? I mean, a kid who's stolen a car and is in the justice system is not headed towards a soft landing.
No, I think no question. Hey, Brendan, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. You say what?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, as always. You know, this is such an interesting topic. Thank you so much for bringing it up. You know, I like to review American history because I have found that often, very often, history repeats itself. And I've also found out very often that a lot of people ignore history, much to our detriment, by the way. But if you remember back, you know, the 60s and 70s were all about equality, about doing the right thing, working together for, you know, a better union. And then Ronald Reagan got into office. And that very moment, from the first day forward, class warfare was resurrected from the dead. And labor, specifically, was being disrespected. And you can, all you have to do is look at the economic numbers of, you know, where the money went and what we've learned since 1980 to 2000, which many people would call the digital revolution. Labor got 0% of the economic gains, whereas white-collar groups got all of it. 7 times the productivity gains were realized by the end of the 20th century. So when Reagan then develops his class warfare and pursues, again, the welfare queens and you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and, you know, find that second job and the third job, all of a sudden, trickle-down economics was born. And somehow the job creator trickle-down critical place became a myth, almost a mythical figure. And we're still seeing this yet today, where again, the gains, there's plenty of strong economic numbers, but they're only being realized by a very small handful of people. Everybody knows this. And I think, guys, that that's at the very, very core of the frustration and the angst and, quite frankly, the lack of a guiding light with young people. You know, they've seen this inequity. And they fought against it, and they're not getting anywhere.
So Mike, go ahead.
Well, so we have found ourselves in this too big to fail, too big to jail scenario where bailouts and money is flowing all over the place, but yet so many people on the labor side have been left out. They haven't realized and benefited from many of these gains.
So, Mike, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, I'm glad that Mike, that you kind of taking this conversation down the road that brings us to this conversation that we're about to have right now, and the fact that Labor Day is a few days away, because at the root of a lot of these things is exactly what Mike is talking about. And I remember well, it's, you know, that's my past and my 34 years in industry. And so I saw that change of how things were from, you know, making a great wage and benefits and a company willing to share with its workers. In my 34 years, I saw that transformation happen, Sandy. I saw it go from the unions were a great part of what we did at A. O. Smith, and I remember, Sandy, the Smith family, the founders of the company, were still the CEOs and the presidents of the companies, and so the family still had control over it, and they believed that we should share.
Yeah, I think this though. I think that the manufacturing side, it's probably true that manufacturing workers' wages have not risen at a level that is appropriately scaled to the rise in wealth of the wealthy in this country. But people who are well employed now in manufacturing, I think, are still probably making middle class incomes. But I think what's happened to our society is that the percentage of workers in our society that are involved in manufacturing job employment, while the numbers have gone up, they haven't gone up anywhere near in proportion to the rate of the growth of our population. So the percentage of our workers in this country who are involved in manufacturing amongst the percentage of total workers has gone down.
Absolutely.
Gone down dramatically. And what has gone up dramatically is the number of people who have something that smells and looks like a full-time job, but they're working in the service industry. And the service industry business model for way too many jobs has been premised on part-time workers working at hourly wages. And beginning in the late 1980s or 90s, the people who were in this industry who had part-time workers figured out that they could avoid paying benefits if these people were part-time workers and not full-time hourly workers. And so many, many hourly workers in this country today are working 34 hours a week, which is full-time labor. They're not going to be able to successfully get another job that's a full-time job. They could only hope to get another part-time job. And they're earning something that is scaled against the minimum wage, okay? Might be more than the minimum wage, but the minimum wage is very low. And as a result, these people are not earning adequate livable or salaries.
844. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with the lack of unions and the fact that these people who are in those situations don't have unions to support them. 844.
We'll talk about it at the end.
Yeah, 967-2789 is the number. A Labor Day weekend on the Earl Ingram Show.
Eagle 1490 AM.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, That was a lot better than the original person.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now I know. Now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's tugging on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing. So what do? We get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
I see there a lowering, a rotten new coffin. I see there letting down, a rotten new coffin. Way over in that Union burying ground. And the new dirt's a-falling on a rotten new coffin. The new dirt's a-falling on a rotten new coffin. Way over in that Union burying ground. Oh, tell me who's that they're letting down, down. Tell me who's that they're letting down, down. Way over in that Union burying ground.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. And Labor Day is this coming Monday. I am going to be on at Labor Fest as always, and interviewing many union leaders, as well as possibly a chance to interview Tim Walz. So I'm kind of excited about that. He's going to be at Labor Fest on Monday. So, look, I'm a union guy. I keep telling people I spent 34 years in the union, and I was involved in our union. I learned a lot about the history of unions, and especially ours. And so, Sandy, as Mike from Kenosha talked about Ronald Reagan coming in, and I saw the drastic change in the union that I was in, where we were able to, you know, keep up with the cost of living and all those different things. Once the companies realized that they could move those companies down south and get away from unionism, and organized union labor, they were able to go back to what Al Holmes was saying about the destruction of the city of Milwaukee, and not just Milwaukee, but, you know, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, well, Cincinnati, the Rust Belt.
Well, there was this evolution that went from almost all the manufacturing in the United States used to occur in the Northeast quadrant of the United States. That was where things got made.
Yeah.
And that was all unionized labor and post-World War II.
Well, the steel manufacturing was
right
there.
Steel,
Pittsburgh.
The Great Lakes ended up
right
being the heart of it, and the railroads that were built to transport things around that area. And post-World War II, there was no international competition to worry about. So the unions had a great deal of capacity to negotiate with their employers, all of whom were competing with one another with the same labor agreements.
Right.
If you were in the same industry, you had the same labor agreements. That all got kind of tipped sideways beginning in the 80s and had to do with the advent of a change in the way businesses looked at their finances. It had to do with world competition. It had to do with leverage buyouts. But the companies began to get very short-term planning horizons. Quarterly profits became a focus. You could build quarterly profits by cutting costs. Payroll was a big cost. Meanwhile, the South was developing population, air conditioning, and made the South habitable. Basically, that's true. And so the jobs, the South was not unionized because they had not had, prior to the 1970s and 80s, manufacturing in the right. South other than Birmingham, Alabama. And so the right-to-work states were these Southern states that hadn't been unionized and were attracting business by essentially not requiring unions. And that was the first stop in this movement of building new. When A.O. Smith built a new plant, they built in Tennessee.
Right.
When Alice Chalmers built a new plant, they built it in a Southern right-to-work state. And right-to-work was a euphemism for no union.
Right.
Or right-to-work for less than union scale. And after that, the move went out of the country, and then the jobs left the businesses altogether. Many of the Wisconsin businesses went out of business.
Right.
As the result of world competition. And what happened to the American economy had a lot to do with that evolution, but we've now at the other end of this evolution process. We might be scaling up some in manufacturing in certain sectors, but this percentage of jobs in America that are manufacturing jobs has gone way down, and the number of jobs in America that are service jobs as a percentage of total jobs has gone way up. And it's these service jobs in the service sector that are have built business models that are premised on minimum wage or something that is measured against minimum wage as the compensation level. And minimum wage is not a livable salary. In Wisconsin, the median income family in 1970 had one breadwinner, and they were in the middle class. Today's middle class family in the country at large and in Wisconsin have two breadwinners. And so they each are earning a fraction of a median class income. And so that means that neither one of them probably has a job that is going to support benefits. Probably neither one of them has a manufacturing job or a trades job. And so the service sector is the place where this is happening. And we have far too many people who are earning minimum wages for that was meant to be aimed at part-time labor, but they're working full-time, 34 hours a week.
So, Sandy, I would say to you,
the turnover rate, incidentally, in service sectors, Walmart, places like that, will have a 200% turnover rate in a year of their employees because they aren't skilled workers.
So, Sandy,
they're fungible.
My problem with all of it is this was not an accident. It was by design.
No, it wasn't by design, Earl.
Well, so
design would suggest that, and that was my fault with Earl, with Al, what he was saying. There weren't people planning this in a room. This was an evolutionary process that came from various exogenous issues that were at play.
So
some of it had to do with the finance community looking at quarterly earnings long-term earnings.
So, yeah, but those people who saw this picture and saw these changes that were taking place had to know the impact it was going to have on the average American citizen. They knew that the average American citizen, the middle-class worker, who relied on that to live a middle-class.
Well, who they?
So,
you know, that's the thing. We want to point at some group. If you could find them, we should shoot them.
So we'll talk about this on the other side, because I think to think that this happened in a vacuum then says that we can't fix it.
Well, I think we can fix it, but it happened.
Who's gonna make the decision to fix it?
It happened like the frog in the pot that where the heat gets turned on.
All right, 844-967-2789. Hang on, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Jane Matt and Air and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer, the founder of the Recombobulation Area and political editor of Civic Media, joins us at 10:30. Be here.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.